Welcome to an emergency jihadology podcast about the fluid situation amongst Caucasus jihadis in Syria and back at home. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Aaron Zellin, founder of jihadology.net.
And I'm Carl Morand, the show's producer. Occasionally, we'll release emergency podcasts like this about fluid situations that have breaking news, particularly those that aren't covered as widely in the media. These episodes will usually be shorter, and they won't have a discussion on the primary source material, but don't worry, Aaron and I will be back in a week or so for the next episode, which will include our normal discussion on jihadi source material. Aaron, who is your guest for this episode?
I was happy to have the opportunity to speak with Joanna Perochuk, a journalist for Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Under the Black Flag blog, which provides daily news and analysis about the Islamic State in Syria and in Iraq, and examines the response to that militant group in the Arab world, Iran, and across the former Soviet Union. She has reported from Russia and the Middle East and has a special interest in researching Russian-speaking foreign fighters in Syria and the interactions between these fighters in Syria and their counterparts in the North Caucasus. She also blogs at ChechensInSyria.com. In this episode, we discuss the recent controversies within Jaish al-Muhajirun wal-Ansar and the Arab coup against the Chechen leaders, the state of the insurgency in the Caucasus in general, and how the Islamic State hopes to take advantage of the disarray within the ranks of the Caucasus emirate.
If you enjoy the show, please leave a rating and review in iTunes, which really helps spread the word about the podcast, and tell your friends on Twitter and Facebook and the like. Every little bit helps.
So the first thing I thought would be good for the listeners to hear would just providing a little bit of background, I guess, on who is Jaish al-Muhajirun wal-Ansar, where did it come from, when did they start, you know, operating inside of Syria, what's the organization's evolution up until what we've seen most recently with sort of this internal fitna and deposing of leaders?
So the group originally started in northern Aleppo in 2013. It was originally led by Umar Shishani, who is now the military emir in the Islamic State. He split up from Jaish al-Muhajirin in about November 2013. There's some confusion over exactly when he left, but the Chechen websites say that he left in around November 2013. And he took with him a group of people who'd been fighting in that Jamaat, and he took them to ISIS. And then after he left, the group became under the leadership of a Chechen emir called Salahuddin Shishani, who was one of the original members of the group, as far as we're aware. He has an oath of allegiance to the Caucasus Emirate, then to Doku Umarov, who was the leader of the Caucasus Emirate. And the group became very much a Caucasus Emirate group. It rebranded itself effectively as Emirat Kavkaz in the Caucasus Emirate in Syria, which was different from how it had been before, because before, although it had been a Chechen-led group, it hadn't really been officially the Caucasus Emirate in Syria. But then the faction of people who were Caucasus Emirate militants, but who had gone to Syria, had kind of taken over this group. And the group became very successful. It was headquartered in Haritan in northern Aleppo. It grew and grew. It took part in a number of kind of quite big offensives against the Assad regime with other Islamist groups, including Jabhat al-Nusra. And I think it grew so large that it started to take on Arabic-speaking fighters as well, and kind of outgrew itself as a Chechen group. And I think that's led to the recent events that we've seen, in which the Chechen and Caucasus Emirate leaders have been deposed, and it's kind of ceased to become a Caucasus Emirate group, or indeed a Chechen-led group, quite drastically in the past couple of weeks.
Yeah, definitely. Before we get to the most recent events, could you describe a little bit more about sort of what the relationship was between Jaish al-Muhajirun wal-Ansar and the Caucasus Emirate? I know that, you know, the leaders and many members had pledged bayat to Doku Umarov. And then after his death, his successor, Ali Abu Muhammad al-Daghestani, just could you talk about sort of the relationship, the history between these individuals and the two organizations and what that meant in terms of what was going on in the Caucasus, but also what that might have meant in terms of how they're operating inside of Syria as well?
Okay. I mean, I think the interesting thing is that a lot of the Caucasus Emirate fighters who wound up in Chechnya, wound up in Syria rather, went there because they couldn't go back to fight in Chechnya. They were on wanted lists. They'd been injured. They had to leave Chechnya or Dagestan. So they ended up in Syria via Turkey and set up a group there in Syria and then started to fight and started to call themselves the Caucasus Emirate in Syria or some... have an affiliation with the Caucasus Emirate, wearing Caucasus Emirate t-shirts, Caucasus Emirate number plates on their cars, and so on and so forth. But the interesting thing was that the Caucasus Emirate back home in the North Caucasus was very unhappy originally about these fighters going there because their point was, we're in serious trouble here. We're trying to fight Russia. We don't need our Mujahideen going to Syria to fight because we've got a manpower shortage anyway. And I think after the Chechens started to make a name for themselves in Syria, it was almost like a PR exercise. Although the Caucasus Emirate was still unhappy about things, they kind of loosened up a little bit. It was like, okay, if you can't fight in Chechnya or Dagestan, go to Syria. But really, we'd rather you come here. And that's been kind of a source of a conflict, because as the situation in Syria has developed, and particularly after the Islamic State declared that it established a caliphate, the kind of nature of jihad, you know, where do you fight? If we have a caliphate, should we be actually fighting here? Does that negate the idea of fighting back home in Chechnya? We know that's been a big question. That's kind of evolved over the past few months. And I think that, again, has led to this split we've just seen now in the past few weeks in Jaish al-Muhajirin.
Yeah, definitely. When you're talking about the split and how it seems that because there are more Arab involvement than Chechens or North Caucasians, do you think that this really first started when Jaish al-Muhajirun wal-Ansar joined up with the umbrella group Jabhat Ansar al-Din? Was that sometime last year? Did that have anything to do with this at all, or is it more internal to the group specifically?
Yeah, I think that did have something to do with it. I mean, I think what happened was, as I said, as Jaish al-Muhajirin became bigger and more powerful and more well-known in Syria as being a fighting group that was able to have victories and fight well, we saw that these Arab groups started to join with it, and it started to kind of expand itself beyond its original base of a Caucasus Emirate Chechen-led group. And so you get a different power structure. And I think really what happened was it kind of, the power structure shifted away from being a Chechen-led group, which was very focused on the Caucasus Emirate and the structures that it had brought with it from the Caucasus. And you got new leaders coming in, new emirs of different houses within the Jaish al-Muhajirin structure, who suddenly became more powerful and thought that the existing leadership, Salah ad-Din, was just not good enough. And so he just was ousted.
Okay. Could you go into a little bit more detail specifically on some of the internal dealings more recently between the leadership of Jaish al-Muhajirin wal-Ansar and sort of these individuals that have essentially done a coup against the leadership and sort of changed the game in many ways for the organization?
Yeah, I mean, it's still emerging, so it's not 100% clear yet. But what we think has happened, based on what I'm seeing from people who are writing posts on social media explaining what's happened, is that we've had some leaders within the group who are linked to the Caucasus Emirate and linked to Salah ad-Din. And there's been internal divisions between them and other people in the group who've started to say, well, you know what, maybe the Caucasus Emirate isn't so important anymore because we're in Syria, we've got links to Syrians, we're fighting as part of a kind of Syrian Islamist network. Maybe the Caucasus Emirate isn't something that we want to have an oath of allegiance to anymore. And so they seem to have manufactured what, as you say, is a coup on some pretext which seems hardly worth having a fight about. It was literally the military emir of Jaish al-Muhajirin, Abdul Karim Krimsky, refused to vacate a house he was using as a base. And he was told to leave by the Sharia court of Jaish al-Muhajirin Mulansar, and he refused to do that. Salah al-Din backed him up, and there was a coup against Salah al-Din where everybody ganged up against him and said that he refused to obey Sharia. And that was literally the reason for deposing the emir. So it seems to me that that's a very fragile reason, and that underneath that there's a bigger reason, which is Salah al-Din was seen as a good leader maybe of a small group, but the group kind of outgrew him. It was too big for him, and his preoccupations with being a mujahid of the Caucasus Emirate just weren't appropriate anymore.
Yeah. I saw that in your post about this, that it was sort of like a startup company, getting so big that then they deposed the CEO, which I thought was an interesting comparison.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's literally, that's effectively what happened. It just, it outgrew him, and the group that it was at the beginning, which was just a little group of Chechens and Dagestanis in Syria there because they couldn't fight at home, it's just no longer appropriate. It's not something that is relevant to today's situation in Syria.
Sure. Do you think that the internal issues, besides sort of the dynamics on the ground inside of Syria in general, had anything to do with the Caucasus Emirate and their status in the Caucasus after the death of Doko Umarov? It seems that there's been a lot of issues and fracturing in that organization itself since last fall when he was killed.
Yeah, I mean, I think the situation in Syria hasn't helped the fracturing. And I think the situation in Syria, there's a group of people in Syria who are linked to Umar Shishani who've been trying very hard to gain power on the ground in the Caucasus. So they've used the situation whereby there's been this fracturing, there's been this kind of weaker group to try to advance their own agenda, which is to gain power, to gain more converts to ISIS, to gain more people to come and fight for them, to gain more traction for themselves on the ground there. And so we've seen that very much lately where Umar Shishani's close confidant, who's called Abu Jihad, who is a kind of ideologue preacher, he doesn't fight, but he makes a lot of videos about Sharia and you know, who we should wage jihad for and why. And he's been pushing very hard, not just to get people from the Caucasus to come and fight with ISIS in Syria, but actually to get them to swear an oath of allegiance to ISIS in the Caucasus and fight there, but under the auspices of ISIS, which is something that's very new. And I think that's what's led to a lot of the fracturing. It's just ISIS is seen as a more powerful group. The Caucasus Emirate is seen as something provincial. It's in a bad situation. It's not winning. It's not making any waves. So the group of people, the group of Chechens and Caucasians in ISIS have been able to take advantage of that quite successfully.
Would you say that most of the Caucasians, Chechens, Dagestanis, however you want to describe that grouping of people, are more of them inside of the Islamic State in Syria and Iraq now than, say, Jaish al-Muhajirun wal Ansar? Or would you say that it's even, or Jaish al-Muhajirun wal Ansar still has the most amount of people from that region of the world?
It's difficult to assess exact numbers, but I think that the contingent in ISIS has definitely grown.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me, without being able to pinpoint exact numbers, I would say that ISIS is now bigger.
Okay.
Especially I think now that Jaish al-Muhajirin is effectively, it's lost its Chechen leadership. I think we're going to see perhaps more people going to ISIS or new recruits choosing to go to ISIS rather than to Jaish al-Muhajirin.
Yeah, that makes sense. In light of this, as I alluded to a little bit before, since Doko Umarov was killed, it seems that not every single person within the Caucasus Emirate has since pledged bayah to then Ali Abu Muhammad al-Dagestani, and then now the new leader since he also was killed since last fall. Could you talk a little bit about the different sectors or different types of people that have, instead of pledging bayat to the leaders of the Caucasus Emirate, have since decided instead to start pledging bayat to Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi?
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, I think it's important to note that there's been no official announcement of a new leader for the Caucasus Emirate. So right
okay,
now,
okay, yeah, because
seeing...
you heard some rumors that in the news, but I didn't. Yeah. I personally hadn't seen anything from them specifically, but I know that there are rumors in the news.
There've been rumors, but I think without there being any kind of official announcement, sure, then the rumors are just rumors. So I mean, what that says to me is that there's chaos in the Caucasus Emirate. There's a vacuum in the Caucasus Emirate.
Yeah, because I don't remember it taking this much time for them to announce Ali Abu Muhammad al-Dagestani after Doka Umarov was killed.
So I think what we're seeing is this kind of leaderlessness situation where, you know, I think the recent, what we've seen recently last week was an audio recording online of the emir of the Vilayet of Chechnya, Emir Khamzat, who... Now, it's not been possible to confirm that this is actually genuine.
Sure.
But no one's come out to say that it isn't genuine, including the Kavkaz Center, which is the Caucasus Emirate website.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of pushes me towards thinking that it probably is genuine. And he pledges allegiance to Baghdadi on behalf of all of the Mujahideen of the Vilayet of Chechnya. So before that, we've also seen a lot of Dagestani Caucasus Emirate groups pledging allegiance and going over to ISIS as well. We've seen some big ideologues. There's a preacher called Ahmed Medinsky, who's turned up in Syria, who used to be Caucasus Emirate, but now he's ISIS. So we've seen this kind of big shift to ISIS.
Yeah.
So if this is confirmed as correct, this pledge of allegiance by Emir Khamzat is huge. I mean, it effectively means that the Caucasus Emirate is dead.
So you would say that the center of gravity still is Chechnya for the Caucasus Emirate, just because it seems that a lot of the content coming out of the Caucasus in the last couple of years has been more from Dagestan. But obviously, originally, the insurgency started in Chechnya, so it would make more sense that that would be more relevant in some respects.
Well, and also Kebikov, Ali Abu Muhammad was a Dagestani. So,
yeah, exactly.
I mean, that kind of shifted things to Dagestan a little bit. But I think that we're going to see a center of gravity kind of shifting to the ISIS brand, if we can call it that. Whether that will actually have any difference on the ground is a completely different question.
Yeah, I mean, you don't hear too much in the news specifically about what is actually going on anymore with this insurgency. Of course, you hear about attacks here and there, and maybe they'll do one of the suicide attacks or raids. But really, what is the status of the insurgency in Chechnya, Dagestan, the Caucasus in general? How does it compare to, say, a few years ago? And obviously, it's nowhere near what it was 15 to 20 years ago.
I mean, it seems to me that things have been greatly weakened. What you do hear in the news is a lot of emphasis on the Russian security forces taking out militants. And I think that one thing that is going to shift if a lot more of these insurgents, these militants kind of go over to ISIS, is that's actually very good for Russia.
Yeah.
Ironically, not because it means that we're going to see more or less attacks on the ground, but because it means that Russia can rebrand the insurgency as, well, this is coming from the outside. It's ISIS. This is something that's happening around the world. It's not just here. It's not an internal problem.
Sure.
It's a problem with foreign militants kind of influencing us, influencing our extremists.
So with all of the dynamics going on related to what we've seen in Syria most recently with Jaish al-Muhajirun while Ansar, as well as sort of this dysfunction in the Caucasus Emirate inside of the Caucasus, would you say that the Caucasus Emirate is still a thing? Is it still an organization? Or is it pretty much defunct now, since it seems that there is no group of individuals coming out with a message saying who the new leader of this group is?
I think the next few weeks will answer that question. But for now, it's looking pretty much dead. I mean, if this buyer from Emir Khamzat turns out to be genuine, and right now, it seems like it could be. It seems like it is. I think that's, you know, another nail in the Caucasus Emirates coffin. It's got pretty much no presence in Syria now. The other major Caucasus group in the Syria in Syria is Ajnad al-Kafkaz, which have told me that they don't have a buyout to the Caucasus Emirate.
Mm-hmm. They're just independent.
They're independent. They're pro-Caucasus Emirate, but they're not formally part of the group.
Sure.
So I think what we're looking at is just a lot of kind of little groups within Chechnya and Dagestan who are leaderless.
So do you think that this might lead to the Islamic State conferring legitimacy on this bayah from the head of Wilayat in Chechnya and sort of, you know, essentially having the Islamic State as the face of the insurgency in the Caucasus now?
That's a really interesting question, because I think what we've seen is we've not seen the Islamic State kind of central leadership like Baghdadi coming out and saying anything about the Caucasus. But what you've got is you've got this group of increasingly powerful North Caucasians, mm-hmm. the face of whom is Abu Jihad, who, as I've said, is close to Omar Shoshani.
Yeah.
Who are striving to almost lead the insurgency in the Caucasus from afar. They're striving for more influence there. They're striving to recruit more fighters to their cause, both in the Caucasus and in Syria. So I think that what we're going to see is increasing efforts by this group to rebrand themselves as the face of the insurgency in the Caucasus. We've already seen that. We've seen those efforts increasing.
Has there been any media efforts inside of the Caucasus from those who have already pledged bayat to Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi and now branding themselves as sort of al-Dawla al-Islamiyya fi al-Kafkaz? Because I've only continued to still see stuff from the Caucasus Emirate, not necessarily new types of media from, you know, the Islamic State in the Caucasus or however they might brand themselves. But of course, I also don't know the local languages. So I was curious if you've seen anything in particular.
No, actually. Apart from the videos, which are very poor quality and kind of speak to the weakness of of these groups in which they're pledging allegiance, then no. What I have seen is people like Ahmed Medinsky, the preacher, kind of going over to Iraq or Syria. And making videos there that are much higher quality and preaching through those videos, which are then shared through social networks that previously you would have seen a lot more people from the Caucasus Emirate on those social networks. And now they're increasingly ISIS.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a big network kind of when we're talking about media through Zello.
Mm-hmm.
We see Medinsky preaching there, Abu Jihad preaching there. And this is outreach. It's outreach to Dagestan, it's outreach to Chechnya, but it's kind of branded as Vilayat Kavkaz, sort of ISIS Vilayat Kavkaz.
Oh, interesting.
yeah, they've even got a little logo. It's kind of like the Islamic State flag with Vilayat Kavkaz in Arabic, which is interesting in itself, the fact that it's in Arabic. So yeah, we're seeing from efforts from Iraq and Syria, Ahmed Medinsky is now in Mosul, apparently, trying to rebrand the insurgency, but from afar.
Yeah.
And they've been able to do so because the Caucasus Emirate is just like a power vacuum.
Yeah, exactly. Is there sort of a relationship or are those that have already pledged bayat to Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi in the different parts of the Caucasus, whether it's a wilaya or whether it's one of their smaller sectors? Is there a relationship between these different leaders, or are they sort of just doing it independently of one another and there's no sort of leadership structure between these individuals? Or do you think that maybe they're trying to set this up behind the scenes now until, you know, it becomes more formalized maybe? I don't know.
I think, I mean, from what I'm seeing is it seems to be very ad hoc. It seems to me that the reason that people started pledging to ISIS was literally because it's like we're in dire straits here. We're in big trouble. We're not making any headway against our enemies, the Russians. Maybe ISIS can actually help us with money and fighters. And that's what Umar Shishani was claiming to have tried to do. It's really hard to tell whether it was actually any truth behind his statements, but he made a video saying that he asked Baghdadi, could he send men, could he send money? He was raising money through the spoils of war that he was achieving in Syria, and he wants to send it back to the Caucasus. And it's impossible to tell if this is actually true or if it's just bluffing. I suspect it's bluffing.
Yeah, I mean, it could be possible, because, I mean, when we saw the Islamic State trying to set up shop in both the Sinai and Libya, at least in particular, they sent operatives from that had trained in Syria and in Iraq that had been Egyptians in the case of the Sinai and Libyans in the case of Libya back home to then, start what we have seen now in the past 8 months or so, I guess, with, Ansar Beit al-Maqdis becoming Wilayat Sinai, and then what was Majlis Shura Shabab al-Islam in Darna, then expanding out beyond that into the different three wilayat inside of Libya. So, I mean, it's possible. Of course, with all of these types of groups, they are clandestine, so there's only a certain amount of things that we necessarily could see right now going on publicly, since I imagine that if they were trying to do something like that, they'd probably want to keep it on the down low for now, at least, especially since I imagine they don't want the Russians to at least find out about it for now.
I haven't seen any. Yeah, I mean, I agree, it's clandestine, so we're not going to perhaps see it. But I think it's harder for people to go back from Syria and Iraq to the Caucasus, first and foremost, because a lot of them are there in the first place because they were on a wanted list for the FSB. So it's like it was hard for them to go back, or impossible for them to go back. So I don't think they're doing that now. Mm-hmm. I think it's a lot of it's being done via Zello, via social media. There's huge networks on social media.
Okay.
Of ISIS recruiters, preachers.
Is Zello like a Russian language social network or something?
Oh, no, it's a walkie-talkie app, so you can download it to your smartphone and then join the conversation.
Shows how much I know these days.
No, it's huge. I mean, the ISIS particularly, they have media group called Sham Today, and they have weekly lectures. Usually they're very boring, kind of 1 hour, 2 hour, but some intricate aspects of Sharia law.
Gotcha.
And I'm kind of confused as to why young men in Dagestan and Chechnya want to listen to that. But
yeah, I don't know. So, do you think then all these moves could potentially lead to a reinvigoration of the insurgency in the Caucasus? Or is this more just trading names, and that, sort of the slow downward spiral of the capabilities of the insurgency in the Caucasus over the past 10 to 15 years will likely continue, whether it's under the banner of the Caucasus Emirate or whether it's under the banner of Wilayat Kavkaz of, Dawla Islamiyah?
I think because of the situation in the Caucasus and because of the way that Russia has been able to crack down on these groups, realistically, it is hard for them to actually carry out attacks, to make any waves, to kind of do things that make people kind of turn around and say, yeah, this is an active insurgency. It's much easier to do that in Syria and Iraq. So I think what we're going to see is more of a flow of people to Syria and Iraq, because it's easier to actually wage jihad there and feel like they're doing something. The question is whether, as we've discussed before, whether it's possible for ISIS to send money, to send men, send ideas back to the Caucasus, whether that's something that actually Islamic State wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
Or whether it's just a lot of hot air and a lot of kind of trying to develop influence on the ground from these people who are in Syria and Iraq. But I think pretty much they're hamstrung by the fact that it has been hard to carry out attacks. It's just Russia has clamped down so hard that.
Do you think that there's a potential support base for these types of guys in Chechnya and Dagestan? Or is the local population pretty much just moved on or decided to deal with the situation, now that the Russians more or less have been able to wrangle back control of these territories, albeit, with these attacks happening every once in a while? Or is it sort of, or do you think that maybe the local population could be interested in sort of, this messaging and or project that the Islamic State has? Because unlike the Caucasus Emirate, which, claims to be an emirate but doesn't really govern, the Islamic State has tried to do this not only in Syria and Iraq, but in a number of places as well. Is there any potential that the local population might be amenable to this, or is it too like ideologically extreme for them?
Well, one interesting thing that I've seen through watching the development of networks on social media is that what you do see is, first of all, there's a lot of pro-Salafist groups.
Mm.
So that does have a popularity. I think the ISIS project, the kind of the growth of the Islamic State, the declaration of a caliphate, has been very exciting for people who are in those groups. So I've seen a lot of growth in these social media groups over the past few months, with more and more people who are not in Syria or Iraq, but who say that they are,
mm-hmm.
and obviously want to go there.
Yeah.
So you don't see that on the Caucasus Emirate groups. They've kind of seem to have shrunk. So just judging from what you can see on the surface of social media and of people who are talking about these things openly, I think that the ISIS project has invigorated it a little bit, but it's hard to tell how that translates into action. If that translates into people going to Syria,
That's what it seems like, that maybe people might just go to Syria and Iraq because there's actual opportunities to mm-hmm. fight and do the state building instead of, you know, the Caucasus, where there's a lot of barriers to it in many ways, not just in terms of the fighting, but also actually state building, since they don't control anything.
It's also a question of prestige, because one of the huge narratives that have come out of this conflict between the Caucasus Emirate networks and the Islamic State networks has been this concept of five-star jihad.
Yeah,
Which I'm sure
we've seen that with Westerners as well.
Right. Okay. So, in terms of the way this has played out with the Chechens, is you have people saying, you know, we're waging five-star jihad here, but the people in the Caucasus Emirate, the people who are still at home,
they're waging one-star jihad or two-star jihad.
It's like once they're eating leaves in the forest.
Yeah.
And if they want to do that, let them eat leaves, but we're going to stay here and we're going to build a caliphate.
Sure.
So, you know, it's, again, yeah, it's about opportunities. It's about prestige.
So in some ways, this could actually be the death knell of the insurgency in the Caucasus, and in some ways, the original independence war and then reaction by Russia after 20 years might finally actually be done in some ways because of all of this internal issues, as well as things happening outside of the Caucasus.
There's also been a shift in the way that people talk about jihad, and that's definitely because of the Islamic State's declaration of a caliphate. So the pro-Islamic State or the Islamic State Caucasians are talking about the Caucasus Emirate as, in terms of, okay, this is a nationalist project. It's not actually jihad. All you want to do is be nationalists, and that's your Democrats.
Okay.
And you're actually, you know, not waging jihad properly.
Yeah.
And no, there's a caliphate. You have to come and fight here.
Yeah, you have to do immigration.
Right. So I think that the concept of the Caucasus Emirate as a sort of, even though it seems strange to call it a nationalist project, but the idea of setting up an independent region that's separate from Russia.
Yeah.
That has shifted in terms of how that's portrayed.
All right. Well, I think we'll leave it at there for now. Thanks for coming onto the podcast and explaining all the different dynamics. I guess we'll have to stay tuned and see what happens next, since this is clearly a very fluid situation.
Definitely is. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to this Emergency Jihadology podcast. Thank you to Joanna for coming onto the show and sharing her expertise with us. Also, thanks to the podmaster Carl Moran for making sure this podcast runs and sounds smoothly. Until next time, I'm out.